And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. Live here inside the MDN studio, Zach Shaw on the other side of the glass. Andre Barthwell here in studio with me. We're live inside the MDN studios. Folks, for all your Michigan apparel and merchandise needs, make sure to visit the MDN home of Proud Box. Proud Box is the official monthly subscription box of the Michigan Wolverines. Each delivery brings great clothing, gifts, and treats for Wolverine fans and students alike. It's the ideal pick-me-up for students away from home, or the ultimate spirit booster for football fanatics of any age. Proud Box Fan Box subscribers can win VIP access and more, including on-field game day experiences, the Jack Ross Stadium Club tickets, tailgate experience of former Michigan quarterback John Wengler, a $500 MDN shopping spree, and even a radio booth experience with Dan Dierdorf and Jim Brandstatter. To subscribe or for prize details and official rules, fans can visit MDN.com, the MDN and the Victors Collection, the official outfitters of Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, the ticket. Joining us, gracing us with his presence as he does every Friday, John U. Bacon. Bakes, good morning. How are you, my man?
Good morning. I'm doing very well, shockingly well, in fact. And right now they're tearing down an old oak tree from our front walk, so that'll be the noise in the background.
Okay, no, not a problem, Bakes. I mean,
not a problem. It's the best day of my kid's life.
well, Bakes, problems. That's what the NFL has right now.
With the
anthem policy, and they have decided on the heels of a report yesterday that said the Miami Dolphins had attached a 4-game suspension to violation of that policy. The NFL and the Players Association have gotten together to put a temporary freeze on it while they come together and try to come up with something that is a little better thought out. And why am I saying that? Because Miami, the only reason why they put that forth, they say, is because there was a deadline for putting the violation, putting something on the books. They hadn't actually determined that a suspension would be attached to it. They don't know what they're going to do, but they just had to put something out there. So this was a placeholder, the NFL realizing the error of its ways in putting that deadline on it, has decided to talk with the players. I'm curious what you think the course of action is moving forward for the NFL as far as the anthem policy is concerned.
Well, in this case, the best way to move forward would have been to move backwards about a year ago when you got into this mess in the first place. Look, it's the United States, and there are two things that apply here. One, of course, freedom of speech. Second thing is an employer can do whatever he wants. So, in other words, freedom of speech does not apply when you tell your boss to go to hell. Mm-hmm. He can still fire you. So you have got two conflicting principles here. But in my opinion, the best thing would have been to do a year ago to do nothing. The protest speaks for itself. These things tend to run their course. Each time they have a policy or something else to address this, it only flames it up again and keeps it alive. And I think, look at contrast this with how Jim Harbaugh's handled the same situation at Michigan. A few players sat down, I think, for a while. I don't know if they sat down all season. Do you know?
No, I can't remember. I think a couple of years ago there was some sort of demonstration for the entire year.
Right.
But it just wasn't, I mean, it wasn't, cameras weren't on it the whole year. I mean, people didn't focus on it the whole year. It was like for the first few games. No, they had raised fists. For the first few games, the cameras were trained on it. And after that, people didn't pay as much attention anymore.
Which is exactly how these things usually go. So if I'm in the NFL, I would take the Harbaugh approach, which is now too late. You blew it. And I recall Jim at first kind of was asked a question about it, and he kind of hit a third rail and very quickly retracted his statement, and within 15 minutes had changed his view on it. Then the next Saturday he was ready for it after the game, and he had a brilliant answer, saying, look, you know, I believe in the national anthem, I believe in patriotism, I also believe in freedom of speech. Our players have it, this is a university, they're free to express themselves, and nothing they're doing will keep you out of heaven. And I thought, that's exactly how you handle this one. And the players were free to protest, and it was not given any more attention from Jim than that, and it tends to go by the wayside over time. And that's how you're supposed to handle this. The NFL, by the way, is so deep in this quagmire, there is no longer any easy way out. You've blown this again and again and again, in my opinion. What do you do now? I know the NFLPA. There's no way you can give a guy a four-game fine, I don't think, suspension, for taking a knee during the national anthem. That is not going to hold up, I don't think. What they really should do is just shut up and let it run its course. But the NFL is incapable of that.
Yeah, you can't help but notice the contrast between the NFL and the NBA, because the NBA, you must stand during the national anthem. But that policy, the NBA's policy, was collectively bargained. Now, you might remember, a couple decades ago, Chris Jackson, who now is known as Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, had his protest during the national anthem, which sort of spurred this. This debate, and then ultimately a resolution that was again collectively bargained between the league and the players. And what you've seen in that league, even with players standing, the NBA being partners with the players in raising awareness and elevating causes, they've been very proactive in that relationship in helping make sure the players use their platform in the ways that players in the NFL are trying to now, and that's all while they're standing during the national anthem.
Exactly right. And think about that. Two things. One, you sat down with the players, treated them respectfully in the NBA, and collectively bargained that while giving them many other outlets, sincere ones in my opinion, where the NBA also put its money involved in various charities and outreach programs and so on, so the players did not feel stifled, stymied, or simply, you're the hired help, so shut up. That is not the relationship in the NBA. So, honestly, the NFL's problems are upstream, and they start with Roger Goodell. Find me who is okay. NBA is about it. He's about the last. He's the only commissioner right now is any good, frankly. Goodell's an idiot. He's a millionaire idiot, and he's proven it again and again and again. We got the elevator film. How many examples do you want? He's a corporate shill for the owners. And he doesn't care about much more than that. He's a man of no principles that I can figure out. All they're trying to do is just make as much money as they can. They don't care about the former players. There's very little money going to those guys. They don't care about CTE. They don't care about head injuries and so on. So he's not my favorite. How about that? and we have
don't
Batman
say.
On this list. Exactly. So I think what you've identified, Sam, is a more structural issue, a cultural issue, in the relationship between the NBA players and the ownership and the league and the NFL, which is already destructive. So, to me, the inability to reach a mutually satisfying resolution on the kneeling for the national anthem is a symptom of the disease between these two parties and not just the cause. So what you really have to do is sit down and start over. And it's July. You can still do it, but they won't.
Well, speaking of starting over, Bakes, I've been talking to John Ubakin this morning, and this is, I already know what your response to this is going to be, but I'm going to put it in front of you anyway. Michigan State hired an athletic director from within, something that they said they were not going to do.
Promised
they wouldn't do that. There would be a national search, and the candidate pool would consist exclusively of external candidates. There was no search at all, and they wound up promoting from within. At this point, Bakes, I don't know that we all, and this is not just a Michigan State thing, this is, us all here in the state of Michigan, think we have any choice but to support the athletic director they have there now and hope that he does well. My broader question is, what do we make of and what do we do about the lack of regard for the people? I mean, it seems like the criteria that was used by Engler for this decision was what his coaches said and thought. What about what the victims, what the student body, what the faculty and staff, what the alums and what folks in the state of Michigan? What about what they think or what we think? And if we feel like there's a disregard for that, what recourse do we have?
The first question is easy, and the last one's hard. you're right. You know exactly what I think about this. This is dumb on five levels, and yet it's not the dumbest thing they've done in the last 8 months. The dumbest thing they did is hired Engler. And whether you like him or not as a governor, there's certainly pros and cons there. He got a couple terms out of it, I believe. And many believe he did a great job, and in some ways he certainly did. But when the faculty comes out on Monday, five faculty reps, and talk to five of the eight trustees at Michigan State, and spell out exactly what they hope to see in the search for an interim president, not a full-time president, but an interim one, they said, first of all, take 1 to 3 months. Even this is very important, given the circumstances, so don't rush it. We want a bona fide academic. We want somebody off campus. We want somebody who's got experience dealing with sexual assault and sexual harassment issues, preferably a woman, but that's not the be-all and the end-all. The trustees must have run from that meeting to do the exact opposite within 24 hours. So there's, like the NFL, most times you see a problem that hits the papers, the sources for that problem are way upstream. In this case, it's hiring Engler because he's not the right guy for this position. Again, he's got a lot to offer in a lot of ways, but this is not it. No PhD, hostility towards public education. He blew the case, the women's prisoners case against the state and cost the state many, many millions of dollars. So in some ways, almost the exact wrong guy. Promised not to hire Beekman as the full-time AD, on the record with that, and then turns around and does exactly that. So your word is nothing. Now, on top of that, you've just made it more difficult to hire a good full-time president. Because now that president's going to walk in and knowing that he or she has got an AD that they don't know, didn't hire, didn't want necessarily, not one of their people. And an insider who is beholden to the coaches and not to the victims and not to a greater mission. So you've just now reduced the ability to get the best possible president full-time after Engler steps down. So you screwed up again, and there's no reason to do it right now. None. There's no compelling reason. There's no urgency on this. They could have simply let Beekman ride out the interim status until you named a new president, and then let that president name his or her full-time AD, which is normally how these things are done. You don't hire somebody right before you leave office, and Engler just did. So they blew this one five ways to Sunday. By the way, Penn State, those guys are pikers compared to what Michigan State has done. And Michigan State had the considerable advantage of seeing Penn State, seeing the example, and you could have turned it around, and you made more mistakes than Penn State made. What they got right in this case, I can't think of, honestly. This is crisis management failure.
Mm. So, I mean, a couple things to unpack there. Number one, you said it's going to make it harder to hire the permanent replacement, the permanent president. What about Engler as that guy? I mean, are we seeing the path being laid for him to keep that job? And then, like I said before, like I asked before, all right, so clearly, victims came out. There were several folks that with some sort of affiliation to Michigan State that were interviewed in a Free Press story. And they all said, we feel like they aren't listening. We feel like they don't get it. They talk about reform and this is anti that. So what do those people do? And more broadly, what do we, because, again, I keep saying this is a state-run institution. I mean, our tax dollars and votes apply there, too. So what about, what do we do in the immediate aftermath of this when it comes to the people making the decisions there?
All good questions, of course. Unpack that one, of course. First of all, if they hire Engler full-time, then I give up. Because you've not listened to your faculty, you've not listened to your students, you've not listened to your alumni, and you've certainly not listened to the victims, whom Engler treated horribly at best, frankly. I mean, his conduct is inexcusable with the victims, again and again and again, both on a micro scale, when he's telling one of the victims, your time is up after a five-minute talk with the trustees. The behind-the-scenes wheeling and dealing, trying to get them to sign for $250,000, which is a low-balling, of course, as well as his macro policies as well. So that if that's even on the table, then, uncle, that's just insane. What recourse do people have? And it's worth noting, by the way, the University of Michigan now, outside of the hospital, gets about 4% of its funding from the state of Michigan. Almost, I mean, U of M is a state school in name only at this point. Michigan State, I believe the percentage is much higher. I think it's more like 15-20% of its budget comes from the state. They are far more beholden to taxpayer dollars than Michigan is. So they are more vulnerable to public opinion, I would say, than Michigan is. And so that's one recourse is how people vote on millages, how they vote on trustees.
I guarantee
you this, Sam, I'll be scouring the trustee list a lot more closely than I have in the past.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think if one thing comes from this from the perspective of folks not directly aligned or affiliated with Michigan State, I think it's that. I think that the rest of us are going to pay more attention. And when you go to the voting booth and you're in that ballot box and you are, trying to go through what Michigan State trustee you're going to vote for, you're going to know more about that person now, I think.
Oh, I know I will. I'm hunkering down for a day or two beforehand to go over all of it. In the past, if I saw an incumbent, I said, well, Michigan State's doing well, good enough, let's keep it up. I probably have voted for Joel Ferguson. I will never again. And out of the 8 trustees, 3 have got some common sense and 5 don't. So, that's all got to change. I said it, and I own all of it. I own all of it.
Speak your mind for real, Bacon.
I was about to say 3 is generous, but no, the 3 they've got have got some common sense. I'm with those guys, but it's just a mess.
Right.
And you raised a very fundamental point, Sam, and a crucial one that often gets buried. It's not what I think about this, I think it's appalling, whatever else. Okay, I'm a sports writer, went to Michigan, I got a vote, that's about all. You're not listening to your own faculty. You're not listening to your own students. You're not listening to your own alumni. That is the Michigan State community. The Michigan State community is not screwed up. The leadership is screwed up. It's still a world-class university with a fantastic culture and horrible, horrible leadership.
Yeah, well said. Speaking of leadership, and we'll close with this one, John Beilein signs an extension. The extension we knew was coming, but man, it's just even though we knew it was coming, it doesn't make it any less huge that the Wolverines have re-upped with the best coach that we've seen, Roman Hardwood, here.
Yeah, that's we'll put that in the no-brainer category. Good call there, but I think you've made the case, and I've made the case that John Beilein, short of the national title that Steve Fisher won, I still maintain he's the best coach. Look at the whole package that Michigan cares about. It's not even close. Mm-hmm. John Beilein is by far the best basketball coach Michigan has ever had. So keeping him is nothing but smart, and this is probably going to be his last stop, as my guess, based on this contract. You've got a top 10 recruiting class coming in, as you know better than anybody, of course. You got a great team coming back. What a horrible time to stop this fun train. So they got it right, and Michigan fans should be in for a few more great years of Beilein basketball, and it also sets you up to do what Michigan State has failed so miserably to do up the road, and that is prepare for a smooth succession of power, because now he's got a coaching tree out there. You can probably get somebody on the list of 2 or 3 or 4 guys that he's got out there who will come back to Michigan and keep it all going. So that's how it works when it's working well.
Gotcha. What's on the Bacon blog, Bakes?
Wiffle ball. You remember Sly and the Family Stone? Hot fun in the summertime. That's when I had most of my fun. I start the article with that. Playing wiffle ball up north, baby, and a little wimpy plastic ball, a wispy wand of a baseball bat, and that's all we did. No cell phones, no laptops, no soccer camps, no adults, no umpires. Solve your own disputes. 3-on-3 baseball, usually wiffle ball. And Sam, if you can hit the runner with the ball while he's running, he's out.
Man, that sounds awesome. Just to be completely unplugged. I'm glad you had a chance to do that, Bake. So, I know you got to skedaddle. I know you got a lot going on this morning, and you'll hear from me shortly. So we appreciate you taking the time with us, man, and we'll talk to you next week.
It is always a pleasure, my friend, and I'll hear about, man, our talks. You got reach, because I hear about our talks the rest of the day and often the rest of the week. So, and I'll be hearing about him in Chicago for the Big Ten meeting, I'm sure. So, thank you, Sam. As always, you're the best.
All right, thanks a lot. That was John U. Bacon, 9:44 on a Friday morning. We got to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side, close things out. We got a range of questions that came through via the phone line and Twitter earlier today. So we'll start knocking those down. And your final opportunity to get in with Dre B89. Here in studio as well, Andre Barthwell. So we'll get to that when we return here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA.